Hi, I'm W2P Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we're here with the one and only Paula Cole, who'll be coming to AMP in North Bethesda on October 19th. Paula, thanks so much for taking the time to call in.
Hey, thank you, Jason. Lovely to be here. Thanks.
Absolutely. Now, I know you just put out a new album in August called Ballads. Is that mostly what we're going to hear on the 19th?
You're going to hear a little bit of it, for sure. You know, anytime I release an album, I tour it, and I draw songs from it, but I always play the favorites. I always play my catalog.
You have to.
Yeah, you know, it's part of who I am and part of what my audience wants, and I love it. And they're like family reunions, these concerts, and we just come together and have a wonderful time and you know, listen to the catalog. I'm getting long in the tooth and deep in the catalog.
No, we love it. We love it. Are you kidding me? Keep getting long in the tooth if you keep putting out good music. What are some of the ballads, remind us, that are on that album?
Oh, there's wonderful classic chestnuts, you know, from the American canon of music from the 1930s to 60s. So you'll have songs as old as Body and Soul, or, you know, God Bless the Child, which largely from the 30s. And then I also have Bob Dylan tunes woven in there from his The Times They Are a Changin' album, which definitely skew more social, political, and they're almost protest songs, really. Songs like The Ballad of Hollis Brown and The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll, really socially conscious, amazing tales, as were songs like God Bless the Child by Billie Holiday. So there is a thread to it. It's kind of a folksy jazz album, so there are standards, but there's also songs that I think belong next to the standards that are more Americana, really, and they're woven together to make this beautiful quilt, this guitar-based, folksy album of music that kind of defies genres. And that's what I was trying to do, is like not be limited to one genre, but blend them together as they deserve to be.
Absolutely. I love it. Man, you mentioned a lot of the greats there. I'm sure that you listened to a ton of them, you know, growing up in Massachusetts, right? How did you actually discover music to begin with?
I was so lucky to be born into my family. They were so musical. My dad especially, he plays many instruments, and he was a musician on the side to, you know, make extra money. He would play functions on weekends, and he was a bass player in a polka band, and they were like a big deal in Connecticut. They were called Johnny Pritko and the Connecticut High Tones, and he played bass, and they would all wear matching outfits, and he was on albums, so I'd go through the albums as a little kid, and I'd find my dad on the album covers, you know, kind of like in that spirit of A Mighty Wind, that kind of folk music scene where
right.
People wore matching outfits, and he was just a naturally gifted musician who could play a little of this and a little of that, had a great ear, and he got me singing so young. So music was made, and I thought everybody made music at home, and I thought everyone could sing and play. I grew up in a family that did it, so they instilled the love and the practice of it for me, and my dad really made it fun. So I learned these from him. And some I arrived later at, like Bob Dylan. I'm ashamed to say I arrived at Bob Dylan pretty late in life. I didn't really arrive at him fully to be appreciative of him until my 40s, you know? And the same with Nina Simone. I'm ashamed to say I didn't really appreciate her till my 40s, but wow. So everything from, you know, how I grew up, the love of it from my dad, from the jazz classics to some of the folksy stuff, to just my kind of perennial search as a musician. I'm always curious. I'm always trying to deepen my musicianship.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's interesting how you say certain, you know, certain artists strike you when you're young, and then something they strike you at different times. And hey, you know, even if it takes till 40 to get Dylan, at least you got him eventually.
I got him.
That's so great. Hey, is it true you got your big break touring with Peter Gabriel? You replaced Sinead O'Connor?
Well, that was my first tour. Imagine that. Imagine a 5-star tour being your first tour. It's all downhill after that.
Right, yeah, exactly. You know? Trial by fire.
I know. And, I mean, I was this serious musician. I went to Berklee College of Music. I was writing my own stuff. I wanted to be a jazz singer. Anyway, I had recorded Harbinger. It was in the bag. It was with my record company, but they were kind of waiting on it. and I was touring. And Peter heard my finished album, Harbinger, but, it was still unreleased. And he literally just called and left me a voice message. Paula, would you join my tour? Would you fly to Germany? Would you fly to Mannheim, Germany on Halloween? This is 1993. And, I had one rehearsal. Of course I said yes, because he was a hero.
Right.
I had one rehearsal, and then I was thrown out in front of 16,000 Germans that night. And the Secret World Live video that they toured, which is beautiful, that was just a few days after I joined. I really was ready. I had to be ready because it was a quickly moving machine. You had to step on the train and be ready to brace yourself because it was moving fast. And I was ready, and I loved his music dearly. So that was my first tour. I don't know if it was necessarily my big break. Definitely people found out about me through it. I think my big break was really Where Have All the Cowboys Gone?
Mm-hmm.
Because it just went up the charts so quickly, and it was really my first hit, and that's what changed everything, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, I still hear that song wherever I go. I'll still hear it, like in the grocery store or driving in the car. Like, it's still around. It amazes me how certain songs just stick around. How did you, do you remember writing it? Do you remember where you were?
I do. I remember I was in San Francisco, and I was sharing a loft with three roommates, and I was surviving on a burrito a day. I'd have half for lunch and half for dinner. It was $2.50 for a bean and rice burrito that I'd load up with salsa. And I was eking it out on a very modest budget, and I was devoting myself to the music, and I was recording at home. And so being in Northern California, and I was recording a lot at home with my boyfriend at the time, Mark Hutchins, who was an amazing producer. And so I was listening to XTC, that British group,
mm-hmm.
who they utilized a lot of humor and wit, and I liked that. And I thought it would be cool to hear some wit and double entendre and irony and melancholy and all of it put together from a woman's point of view. Because you don't really hear that. You know, we tend to be singing about love all the time, or, oh, he did me wrong, or, oh, I love you. So I just wanted to write something wry, W-R-Y, wry, funny,
right.
With overtones. And so the lyrics came first. Where Have All the Cowboys Gone? It spilled out from the page. And then I wrote a rumba of a song. Dum 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 dum. Where have all the cowboys gone? And nobody liked it. Nobody liked it.
Come on!
Nobody liked it. And it stayed in the coffers in the closet of my demo tapes for a couple of years, and I released Harbinger and la-di-da. And then it came time to start building up songs for, what would be my second album, which became The Fire. And I thought, I know that's a good song. I just have to dress it up differently. So I put on my producer hat, and I thought, I'm going to nick that Ringo Starr groove that happens on the reprise of Sgt. Pepper's if you listen to the whole album. So you hear Paul do the count off, one, two, three, four, two, and Ringo goes into this badass groove. It's gorgeous. And at the time with my limited technology, I kind of looped that drum groove, superimposed cowboys, put on the background vocal, which is so catchy, and wrote a bridge. And then everybody, just loved it. And it became what it became, and it just needed different production. And there you go.
I love it. I love that that whole story began with a burrito a day. Where have all the burritos gone? And then it's just...
No.
Well,
they went into my tummy.
That's such a great story. Well, I'm glad that it got out of your demo tape closet and finally got out to the world. It's such a great song. All right, so we also got to ask you about you topped yourself. Somehow you didn't think you'd have a bigger hit than Where Have All the Cowboys Gone, but then you do I Don't Want to Wait, and the thing blew up and was massive. So do you remember where you were when you wrote that one?
Yes, I do. I was... living in New York City. So I went from, I grew up in Massachusetts, and that's where I'm calling you from now, but I spent a couple of years in San Francisco early days, and then I moved to New York City, where I spent the majority of my adulthood, like 12 years, and that's where I was in the 90s. I was in my 20s in the 90s in New York City. It was electric. It was fantastic, and I was living in an apartment in Chelsea, and I was sitting at my spinet, and I wanted to write something for my grandfather. I just felt he was going to leave the planet soon, and I was thinking about the way he raised my dad. I thought about his relationship with my grandmother, their marriage, which wasn't so happy all the time, you know, and how I didn't want to repeat those mistakes, and how we just learn these cycles from our parents, and then we kind of unconsciously repeat them as we make our own families. And I thought about how I didn't want to live my life in an unexamined way like that and continue cycles. I also, you know, so I wrote it for him right before he died. I know his spirit is in that song. My grandmother, too, she's in that song, and it kind of is a family song for me. Uh-huh. Of course, it was used by Dawson's Creek, and it had a whole other life that I didn't anticipate, but that was the original intention.
Oh, I love that the original intention was a throwback to you know, your ancestors. I love that. That's sweet.
And then it's a family song.
Yeah,
family.
It's a family song. And then ironically, there's this whole new young group of kids that latch onto it for the show. But that's funny. It kind of works for both. Have any of those cast members from Dawson's come up? Katie Holmes, Michelle Williams, they went on to be huge stars. Did they ever come back afterward and thank you for putting them on the mat?
I don't know if I can take any credit for that. I mean, it's true. They had amazing careers.
I think they should give you credit.
they probably got really sick of the song, you know?
Right.
Well, they're nice people. I met them once. I went down to that. Well, I can't remember if it's North Carolina or South Carolina where they shot that. And I met them, and they were all really nice people.
That's so great. I want to know, last sort of throwback question, then we can bring it back around to the show. Memories of winning Best New Artist at the Grammys. You know, Leanne Rimes won the year before you, Lauryn Hill the year after. That's pretty damn good company right there. Do you remember sitting in the crowd and them calling your name?
Oh, I can kind of remember. It's also overwhelming, really. I mean, I'm such a high introvert. When you take the Myers-Briggs, you can determine, are you an extrovert or are you an introvert? Well, I'm high introvert. And I'm used to being a singer and even a teacher or an educator, talking to people. But this is a different level when fame was hitting for my 2 minutes. And it was uncomfortable. And I was on the road all the time. And I think on one hand, I was very lost. But I was overwhelmed by the attention that this album got. It was extraordinary. Probably could have handled it better, you know, when I look back on hindsight, because I had never even watched the Grammys, quite frankly. I was not a TV watcher growing up. We had a shit box, black and white. And I didn't just really participate in that kind of thing. And I'm in music because I loved it so dearly, and I worked hard, and there I am, and I'm in it, and I don't know, it was kind of a blur, quite frankly. And now I have more perspective on it, and it makes a good bookend, and, you know, it makes a lovely title, Grammy winner. The acknowledgement is amazing. But really, I'm an introvert with a lot of catalog. I have a lot of albums out there and a lot of songs and great fans. So to me, it's more about the whole, and I wish to be known more for, like, the content of my catalog.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, we're going to hear a lot of the content from your catalog on the 19th at AMP in North Bethesda. We're so excited to go see you. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us today. We know you're a busy woman, so thanks so much for dropping in.
Oh, thank you, too, for your support. And I'm psyched to go, to go back down to the area and see all of you. And please come say hi to me after the show. I'll be probably signing things at the merch table, so please say hello.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks so much for joining us today. Paula Cole, everybody, on WTOP. Thank you.
Thank you, too. Bye.